To Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me as always is Jason.
What's up?
How you doing, Jason?
Doing great. How about you?
I am spectacular. What you drinking there?
I am drinking Delirium Tremens or something like that.
It's made
in Belgium. It's a beer. I don't know, it's not bad. Yeah. It was like $5 for the bottle though.
For one bottle?
A 12 ounce.
Dude.
Yeah. It's not good enough for it's not like a $5 milkshake.
Yeah. It's a fancy bottle. Looks like it's not quite white, but it looks like it's like a croc, you know?
It kind of looks like a malted milk chocolate ball.
It does. It looks just like that.
Yeah.
Like it's a bottle-shaped malted milk ball.
And I kind of thought when I was buying it, it might taste like that a little bit.
Doesn't?
Nope. Too bad. I was a little bummed about that.
So. I'm bummed too for you.
But I'm looking forward to my second beer of the night.
Uh-huh.
That I'm going to have here in just a few minutes, which is made by Heavy Seas. I've had their stuff before. It's pretty good. It's a Winter Storm Category 5 Ale.
Whoa.
So it's a big storm. So that's good to know.
Category 5.
Category 5. So, whoa. Yeah.
Yeah. I am drinking something really exciting. Water.
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 That's spiked with more water.
Yeah, spiked with an ice cube. Actually, that already melted. So, you know.
It's pretty interesting. I think I got the better end of the deal.
I think you did, yeah. Oh, I'm so sad. No, I'm not. I'm excited because we are here recording our podcast. This is episode 3.
Episode 3.
We're already 3 episodes in, dude.
That's pretty exciting.
I'm excited. We're excited a lot, aren't we?
We are. We use the word excited a lot. Maybe we should focus on using a word that's not excited.
What should we use?
I don't have anything. I just always use the word excited.
Thrilled.
Jazzed. I like
pumped.
That. Pumped. Pump up the jam. Man.
Pump it up. I don't know the rest of that song. Other words for excited. I don't know. I'm lost.
No, the only one I keep thinking of now is thrilled because you said it. Thrilled. So I'm distracted when we do this podcast because, to the behind you, we've talked before, we're in your like office area and to your left, there's this like carrot doll. It's like a dude in a carrot outfit.
Yeah. That's Tybo the Carrot Man. I just dropped a bunch of crap. Tybo the Carrot Man from the original Lost in Space series. This is not an original toy. This is a reproduction, of course. Maybe it's not even a reproduction, but anyway, I bought this like 15 years ago.
Well, it's distracting.
Is it?
Yeah, that was actually from they actually had a carrot guy in the Lost in Space.
Have you never seen the old Lost in Space?
Apparently not. Yeah. I'm kind of glad that I didn't because there was a man in a carrot suit.
It's a chubby man in a carrot suit.
And he's supposed to be an alien?
Yeah, yeah.
So like there's a world where people just look like carrots?
Well, this guy looks like a carrot.
Scientifically plausible, I would say.
Hey, I mean, you know, why not?
Danger, Will Robinson. Carrots coming your way.
He's a cool toy, isn't he? He's a carrot man. How many carrot men have you seen?
I don't get it. So, but I'm going to get a picture of him to post in the show notes.
Okay.
So that people understand how stupid this carrot man looks. So I'm snapping a picture and you guys can check the show notes. That'll be in there. So that you can see the stupid stuff Rob has in his room. But when I said I was distracted though, you seem to be like, oh yeah, you're distracted. Why were you going to... did you assume I was distracted?
I thought you were going to talk about the Snuggie hanging on the wall for soundproofing.
Well, yeah. There's that. We asked Twitter, some friends on Twitter, if they could tell us a good cheap soundproofing. That's what Rob asked. And we got 2 replies. The first was from BG Josh, and he replied that we should use dirty laundry.
Fill the room.
Fill the room with dirty laundry, which, I mean, I bet Rob has a lot of dirty laundry, but...
Oh, man.
So we could have done that. We also talked to Adam from the podcast, and he suggested just hanging blankets on the wall, and Rob said, "What a good idea!" And then instead used Snuggies. So
it's all that we had that we were willing to
destroy. So. Yeah. Okay, so that's what you were gonna say, though. All right. No, mystery solved. I feel good about myself. Hey, what have you been playing?
I have been playing a game called Gravediggers. Have you heard of Gravediggers?
I have not.
Twilight Creations. Twilight Creations? Is that the... Yeah, Twilight Creations Incorporated. I got it at Gen Con 2 years ago, I think. I don't know. Anyway. It's a game where you are a gravedigger, and kind of the concept of it, it's, you know, 1900s kind of thing. You are a gravedigger, and there are other gravediggers working in the graveyard or working in the city, and there are multiple graveyards. And you're all kind of bored because digging up graves kind of sucks.
Does it say that? The gravediggers are bored.
I will read to you from the instructions. It says, "You are a gravedigger in a small town. Business is very good, but your job doesn't pay much, is very dirty, and above all, is really boring."
Okay, I stand corrected.
"To add some excitement and an extra source of income to your life, you decide to start a contest with your fellow gravediggers. Everyone has 1 week to borrow, in quotes, as many valuables from their clients as they can. Any cemetery is fair game, and whomever has the most stuff at the end wins. Everyone agrees it sounds like fun, and let's face it, they can't take it with them."
Nice. See, this is the problem and why I was confused.
Uh-huh.
When I heard the name Gravediggers, I just assumed they were stealing from people and that would be exciting.
Uh-huh.
But apparently their actual job is they just dig graves and put people in them.
That's their normal day job.
Oh, see, I was thinking grave robbers.
Yeah, I
know. Not grave diggers.
Right.
But really...
You thought wrong, pal.
The game should be called Grave Robbers because that's what they're actually
doing.
Well,
they're... Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, so here's the deal. It's a game, it's up to five players, 2 to 5 players.
Yep.
We've been playing it 2-player. And you set up 5 graveyards, okay? So even if you're only playing with 2 players, you got to have 5 graveyards.
Okay.
And you have a deck of cards in your hand. And in that deck of cards, you have cards that will represent valuables.
Okay.
That you might be digging up out of a person's grave to steal from the corpses.
Sure.
There are bandits that might steal stuff from you. There are cops that will chase everybody away and prevent you from stealing things. There are accomplices that will increase your odds. And then there are grieving widows that will scare all the accomplices and bandits and things away. The grieving widows, they don't scare them away. The grieving widows are so sad that all the men are drawn to them and just feel so sorry for them. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Different things. There are different cards in there also that give you score multipliers and stuff. So the way it works is you take turns and you turn over a tile. There are 7 tiles in this game that allow you to either place a card, place an item in a specific graveyard, and you place them all face down. They'll let you turn over one of those cards to see what is buried in that graveyard. So that everybody can see it. You can take a peek at something where just you can look at that card and see what's in there, and then put it back down so nobody else knows. And then there's the tile that says it's time to dig the grave, and so everybody has to go into that graveyard and dig. And the interesting thing about this is that you start the game, everybody has their own little kind of hidden section. You have a screen in front of you.
Okay.
And behind your screen is money. And you start the game with 10 coins.
Okay.
Basically $10, let's
right.
say. Okay. And so what you're doing here is you're digging up that grave, and then before you turn over those cards to reveal what it is, you have to bet on how much money is in there.
Okay. Okay.
You make a wager. So let's say we were playing together and we're looking at a graveyard that's got 5 cards in the graveyard and they're all face down. We don't know what any of them are. Okay. And the valuables in there could be worth $3, could be worth $10. There could be a score multiplier in there that doubles the value of everything.
Okay. Okay.
So let's say I'm going to bet $5. So I take 5 coins from behind my screen and put them in my hand closed, you know,
because okay.
that's a secret. And then you take money from behind your screen. Let's say you bet $7.
Okay.
And you keep that hidden. And then what you do is you put your hand out on the table. All the players put their hand out on the table and you go 1, 2, 3, and everybody turns over and opens up their hand to reveal how much money they bet.
Okay.
Okay. Then you turn over the cards to see what's in there.
Okay.
All right. And then so I put in 5, you put in 7, right? Let's say there's a total of $10 worth of valuables in there, okay? Whoever bet the lowest gets paid out first. So I bet 5, so I'm going to get $5 from the pot because that means I took that valuable. You bet $7. How much money is left?
$5.
There's only $5 left in there. There's not enough to pay you out, so you don't get anything. You get to keep your money, but you don't get anything.
Okay, so the idea is to bet low, but not too low.
But not too low, right.
So really, bet as high as you can without betting too high.
Right, because if you had bet 12 and there were only $10 in there, you wouldn't get anything anyway, right? And then some of those other cards that I mentioned, like the bandit will make it so what does the bandit do? I think the bandit makes it so not only do you not get anything, but you lose all your money because the bandit steals it all from you too. You know, and there's other things in there. So it's interesting. It's kind of a neat idea. Like I said, we tried to play a two-player, and it doesn't really play real well as a two-player game.
Okay.
It's one of those that I think would be best with four or five players.
Okay.
So, but it's fun. How about you? What have you been playing?
I've been playing the game Carnival. It's a card game here. It was made by Dice Hate Me Games. Specifically, it was designed by Sherilyn Joy Lee Kirkman. And it's a super fun game. I got it off their website. It was like $20.
Okay.
So it was a good deal. Basically, you are just with your cards. You are attempting to build carnival rides. So you've got your midway.
Okay.
I was gonna say mainway. You got your midway with the possibility to build five different types of rides.
Okay.
And you have to get all the pieces for those rides. And so all the rides are different colors. And basically, within the game, you've got your cards, and you're trying to play the cards out.
Mm-hmm.
And enter the midway to create. You have to create four to win the game, four out of five. And you can only put them down in certain pairs and such. You have to have at least two to put it down.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this dice mechanic where you roll, and there's this little placard that comes with it where you roll the dice, you roll 2d6, and then you assign them, and each one allows you to do something like steal a card from someone else's midway. And then you get these admit one tickets that allow you to kind of cheat the game by removing or adding a pip or two to the dice.
Oh, okay.
Or re-rolling your dice.
Yeah.
And I think you roll 3d6 and you use two of them. Yeah, unless you roll triples, and then you get to count one as a bullseye, which can be anything. But it's a fun game. With two players, it was a good time.
Uh-huh.
I really get the feeling with four players, it would be insane.
Yeah.
Because you're constantly stealing from... I mean, you're encouraged every turn to be stealing from your opponents.
Right.
And the one mechanic in this game, it's so simple, but it makes me so happy, is there are wild cards.
Mm-hmm.
You play a wild card out on top of another... on top of one of your things. So, you know, so many games you play a wild card, right? And you're afraid to, because when you play your wild card, it's done, right?
Yeah.
It's like if you're playing like a rummy style game, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you played your wild card and now it's stuck. And I hate that, because you're afraid to play your wild cards because you don't want to lose them. But this game, you can reassign your wild cards on the midway at any given time.
Oh, cool.
To help complete stuff. And that's really cool, because it gives you a lot more freedom, and you want to use your wild cards. You feel encouraged to use them.
Yeah.
And I don't think the opponent can't steal your wild cards from the midway. They can steal other cards, but not your wild cards. So that's helpful, because that's another reason why you're encouraged to play them. And I applaud that mechanic, because it's not constraining. So
yeah,
we'll have to play it together with our wife sometime.
Yeah. Can I see the box?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. It's nice packaging.
Right. It's a small box, but it seems like they packed a lot in there.
They did.
Which is nice.
It comes with wooden D6s, which are pretty cool, and a bunch of little admit one tokens.
Yeah, I like those.
And I want to say... I think maybe Superior POD did that, but I'm not sure for certain.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, though, because Dice Hate Me from on Twitter
mm-hmm.
had recommended me to look at that site when I was talking about trying to price out printing up a card game. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that's how I found out about his game, because he said, hey, I printed my game through there. And so I went and checked it out and was like, oh, this game looks fun. So I picked it up and...
Cool.
I was interested to see, you know, what the quality of the cards were and everything, and they're really good. So
yeah, and it looks like it's got a bunch of vintage photography on it too, which is nice. That's nice.
I thought it was just artwork. Is that actually vintage photography?
I think it's real photos.
You would know better than I would. Let me look here.
I'm pretty sure those are real photos.
You're right. Yeah. It does look like
I like that.
They were taken with Instagram.
Yeah, they are kind of tinted like that.
Yeah, I like that.
You don't see that too often. You don't see real photography on a game like that too often. That's a nice
very
touch.
Very true, very true.
It's a nice touch. The whole thing looks designed well. I mean, I like the look of it. I like the box is a good size.
And the box is sturdy, too.
It's not a sturdy box. Yeah, I'm impressed. That's a good product.
Unlike you showed me the Gravedigger's box, which like is not a good box.
Man, right.
So
yeah, it's like the Gravedigger's box, it's like a full size board game box, and it's basically just a deck of cards, a few tiles, and some little round coin tokens. And it doesn't need to be in a box that big. And plus it's got this big plastic insert in the box to try and keep it organized, but the plastic insert's too shallow, so all the cards get all messy in the box. It's just kind of a pain. I mean, it's not a bad game. It's a fun game. And we've played it with four players one time, and it was fine. It was great. We liked it a lot. Plus, I think we only paid like $10 for it.
Oh, that's...
I know. So it's totally worth every penny.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's just... A lot of the design of it is kind of uninspired. A lot of the cards... I mean... Right.
Though, I mean, to be honest, everything that's in there could have fit in this small box that
Easily, yeah. I mean, you look here at the... At the cards. I mean, there are some portraits in there that are nice but paintings.
These,
but
like just standard cards are just kind of lame.
They're just kind of dull. It's kind of lifeless. Yeah. So it's a bummer. Yeah.
So, all right. Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been playing. You want to move on to the mechanic of the week?
Mechanic of the week. Yeah. You know what? And I'll keep talking about Gravediggers for this.
Yeah, it's your turn. So go right ahead.
Because it comes with these tiles. All right. And I told you before that there are different things you can do as the game goes on. Every time it comes that it's your turn, you have to turn over a tile.
Right, right.
And it might be a place tile where you place a card in a graveyard. It might be a view tile, so you can take a peek at a card and then turn it back over. And then there's a reveal tile where you turn the card over.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Gravedigger tile, where if you turn over the Gravedigger tile, that means, oh, time for everybody to bet and dig and see what's
right.
In. Okay. So there's seven of these tiles. And the way that works out is you have four place tiles, one view, one reveal, and one Gravedigger.
Okay.
Okay. And every time you get through the whole thing, you're supposed to shuffle them and then put the stack back over. So you don't know where in that stack each of those things is.
So basically your graveyards are just a stack of tiles.
Well, each graveyard is a group of cards on the table.
Oh, okay. I have it backwards. Sorry.
Yeah. So it's just the action tiles that are stacked.
Okay.
Right. So what that does is that guarantees that at least once every seven turns you're going to start digging a grave. Right.
Right.
Okay. The thing that I don't like is that these are just tiles. You know, they're heavy chipboard tiles. They're hard to shuffle.
Okay. Because they're tiles.
Because they're tiles, and there's only seven of them. Okay, so it's not like you can't just put them out on the table. You can. That's how you have to. You put them on the table, you move them around, and then you pile them back up. But it's kind of a pain, right?
Right.
And I just can't help but feel like there's a better way to do that. Like, if it was up to me, I would have just done a D6.
Or even a small deck of cards.
Yeah, I think tiles were the wrong choice there.
Because when you said tiles, having not played the game, I made the assumption at first that it was like laid out tiles for a graveyard,
yeah,
and you were picking a location, and then I realized, oh no, the tiles are stacked, which mm-hmm. to me seems stupid. I just don't see a point for that.
No, I don't either.
It's like they wanted to not make more cards.
Mm-hmm. They wanted to have tiles. A different feature in there.
Right, which I think is cool, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I...
It gives another dimension to the game, but I think it's the wrong dimension.
I mean, I saw there were money cards in there. Heck, yep. You'd have been better off having money tiles for right. easy tracking of your money so everyone could see it,
yeah.
As opposed to, yeah... I think a dice thing of that, like a D6, would have been great.
Right. So the negative of that is that would take you from seven tiles down to six.
Right.
Okay. Which, you know, that it's one less. You would basically cut out one of those play styles. So instead of having four tiles to, say, place a card in graveyard, you'd cut that down to three, right? You would also then not necessarily be guaranteed to have one Gravedigger every seven, every six rolls. Because, you know, technically if you're rolling a die, you might not get a Gravedigger once in every six rolls.
Right.
But you're probably still going to get it often enough that it won't be a problem.
Well, one out of six chance.
Right. And then if by some chance, I mean, there's plenty of cards in the deck.
Right.
So if by some chance you end up rolling the die and going through 12 turns before you get another Gravedigger out there, what's wrong with having a ton of cards in your graveyard,
right?
You know, in one of those graveyards. Plus, you're spreading them around five different graveyards. What's wrong with that? I don't see.
Right.
I don't think that's a problem.
You could even, I mean, if you wanted to get a little spicy, you could have like 2d6, and then say whenever you roll a double, the Gravedigger shows up,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah, right.
I mean, because then you've increased the odds of the Gravedigger showing up,
yep.
And then you've increased the chances of, you know, the pairs that you could have.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. So I thought that was something interesting to talk about, and then to talk about it in terms of you know, different ways to approach achieving a goal in game design. That you know, the goal here was to randomize a character's or a player's action in that turn, right?
Right, right.
Okay. So there are different ways to do that. You can do that by shuffling cards in a deck.
Yep.
And just seeing what comes up. You can do that by rolling a die. What other functions are there out there that could help you achieve that goal? What do you think?
You could have a spinner.
You could have a spinner, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not that great of a tactic, but...
No, well, you know, it's something, though.
It works for some games.
Yeah.
Game of Life, for instance.
Yeah.
Wheel of Fortune.
You have a Pop-O-Matic bubble.
That's basically dice, though.
Yeah, right.
I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could also have a set... You could also have just a set... I guess it's, if you're saying randomized, I was going to say if you didn't want to randomize, it could just be a set order of...
Set turn or...
You know,
like, turns, yeah.
You have a little track you're climbing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah, and in this game, I don't think that'd be the right choice, but...
No, I agree. Though, I mean, basically, when you've done six tiles and the Gravedigger hasn't come up yet, you know he's coming next turn.
Coming, right, yeah.
So...
So, for that matter, I mean, it does... Maybe that's valuable strategically, but I don't really think it is. You haven't played the game, but from my experience, I don't know that knowing for sure what card is next or what tile is next,
right.
I don't really know if that makes a difference to me in terms of strategy.
Right. Yeah, I would agree that it seems like there's a better way to execute that. I mean, dice are so easy of a way to do that.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then you just make a custom dice, you know?
Right, oh yeah.
You know, you'd have three faces of the dice that are place. One that's dig, one that's view, and one that's reveal.
That could get expensive, though, too.
Well,
from a
right.
pricing standpoint.
Now, that's a good point. That would...
At least ChessX, we know, charges per side.
Per side, right.
So...
Yeah, so that's right. So if you're going to produce a less expensive game... That's a consideration. But in that case, then, I think you should just go with cards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still would say 2d6 is pretty easy, because you figure 2d6, right? You then have to have 11 options, because you can't roll a 1, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have 11 options, but if you say every double is a Gravedigger,
mm-hmm.
I mean, statistically speaking, those doubles should come up a decent amount.
I would think so.
I don't know the exact odds on that, because I'm not good with math, but, I mean,
right.
It's something.
Yeah, and you know, and if you did just use a standard die with number with pips on it, The screens that you use to hide your
bank. They have information on the back. They could easily just have the numbers on the back.
It would be so easy to just put a number reference on there, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's ready to go. Yeah, so I just thought that was an interesting change there that I think would make the game easier to play and more approachable.
And probably cheaper. Because can I see one of those tiles?
Yeah, yeah.
They're chipboard, but I mean,
yeah.
They're
heavy tiles.
I mean, and there's artwork on both sides.
Yeah.
So it does seem like there would have been a cheaper way to do it, too, even if you're just looking from a cost standpoint. Now, I mean, maybe they were, you know, maybe they were just trying to make the game feel like it had more. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, this is essentially a card game.
Yeah, it basically
that comes
is.
In a board game box.
Right.
With a couple things.
Right.
And honestly, if the whole system was based on cards... And you didn't even, I mean, I guess you've got your money tiles, so you're trying to hide those, but really, the screens, you could do without those, too.
Yeah, well, the screens are there so that your other players can't see how much you're putting in your hand, so they don't know how much you're betting. And there is a mechanic in there also there. Sometimes you can bet zero, bet nothing, and just reveal an empty hand,
uh-huh.
and you can mess with the other people. So that's
right. That's
why you kind of want that screen there.
Right.
So...
Interesting, though. Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to try the game, but
mm-hmm.
you haven't really sold me on it. You've made me feel like it could be a much better game.
I think it would be a much better game with five players.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more happening then.
It's a lot more happening. It's a lot more unknown. A lot
right.
more you don't know what's going in there.
But what happens if you tie on your bet?
Then you both get paid out unless there's not enough to cover both of you, and then nobody gets anything.
So if we both bet five and only nine came up, then we're done.
Right.
Okay, cool. I just thought I'd ask.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everyone bet one or something.
Yeah. And the funny thing is the coin tiles in there, I mean, they've got They've got stuff in there. They've got values in the coins from 1, 5, 10, 20. Then they also have these minus 10 coins. I don't know why you would ever get below zero. It doesn't make any sense to me.
There's nothing in the instructions about it?
No. I mean, I guess theoretically you could go negative in your money, but if you're going to go negative, you would just be betting zero. Unless it allows you to bet against nothing. But there's nothing in the instructions about saying that, so that confuses me.
Maybe they were just like, we should add some extra tiles. Let's add negative tiles. What's it going to do? I don't know. Add it anyways.
I don't know. Yeah, so, yeah, there are issues with the game that bug me. But, I mean, all that said, I still like it. I still like it. I'm still glad we bought it. It was still a really good value for the price. Yeah, so.
But yeah, it was only $10. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one under your foot there, too. Dropped a bunch of the money.
And by money, he means little tiles that have numbers on them.
Circular chipboard things, right. Yeah, and again, I mean, that's a number on a colored background. That's just kind of dull.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to see this with more effort put into the design.
And it actually, it's sad because it doesn't fit the style of the rest of the game. Like, some of the stuff is kind of gothic looking, and then there's these solid color.
Yeah. It's like they paid an artist a lot of money to do, like, 4 beautiful paintings, you know? Right. And then just kind of half the rest of it. So, that's...
I would concur. It does look a bit like that.
Yeah. So, anyway. That's what I was interested in talking about. Do you want to move on to practicing the pitch?
Let's do that.
All right. It's your turn.
It is my turn. So, today I'm going to talk about an idea I had for a bike messenger game.
Ooh.
So, it's a tile-based game, but not like a Carcassonne where you're building as you go.
Yeah.
So, the game setup would be... it would be like a Catan, to where you would set out the tiles. They'd be square tiles, 2-inch square tiles, whatever, you know. You would set them all out, and on those, so they go randomly into like a 2x2 square.
Okay.
Now the idea is it would make a city. The city would have buildings all over it. It would have construction zones, and it would be randomized then. So you have no idea how it's going to turn out. Now, then your goal is to be a bike messenger and to deliver packages.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this deck called the delivery deck, right? And that delivery deck, at the beginning of the game, you look, how many players do I have? So you, let's say you have 4 players. Mm-hmm. You'd flip over 3 delivery cards. So you're always going to be short, right? Everybody starts from a different point. Like each, I would think that one of the tiles would have like a marker on it for like, you know, each color player, like green, red, blue, whatever. So you start from that point. So you could get lucky in the beginning. Because the idea is the card would have 2 things written on it. It would have a pickup and a drop off, right?
Okay.
So first you have to get to the pickup building, and then when you get there you can pick that card up,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to get to the drop off, and then at that point you get paid. And I haven't worked out exactly how the payment system works. Even the payment system may just be you had a delivery. Ta-da. Yeah. Maybe there's a value on that delivery.
That's what I was going to suggest, that delivery card has a value on it, and if you succeed at that, then you just keep holding on to that card.
And then you just have a certain point value that ends the game, say. Or some sort of time limit or something that ends the game. Mm-hmm. But the idea is there's always going to be one short because you can steal from other players. Now, what comes into that is your ride deck. Sorry, I was trying to see what I called it in my notes here. So your ride deck would basically be, at the beginning of the game, you get 5 cards, and every turn, when you spent them, you could draw more.
Okay.
And what those would do is those would be moves you could do. Maybe stealing from other players.
Uh-huh.
That would be like a common card you would get in there.
Yeah.
Or power boost or something to go faster. And the base mechanic would be that you would roll, I think, 2d6, and every point you get on the 2d6 is a city block you can go on that turn.
Okay.
So, and if each tile was one city block, or we'll say 2 city blocks, maybe there's a midway point in the tile, just to make it feel a little bigger.
Yeah.
So you'd be rolling a 2d6, and then you maybe could modify it with your ride deck, or you could use it to screw over other players. You know, maybe you play it on another player, and that makes them have to slow down because of construction or something. What interests me about it is the idea that if you've played the game a few times, mm-hmm. you're going to know what the best deliveries are.
Yeah.
So when that board gets laid out, you're going to already start thinking,
oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, well, this building, that delivery is going to be awesome when it comes up because it's super close and it pays really well.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that it's like Catan, where when the board gets set up for Catan and you put the numbers out for resources, you immediately are like, oh, man, ore is going to be really easy to get.
Yeah.
And wood is going to be really hard to get. So I need to focus on getting a hold of wood right away, getting out a good number there. Because for anybody who's played Catan knows that there's good numbers and there's bad numbers. And if all of one resource randomly gets selected to have all bad numbers, that resource is going to be really hard to get a hold of that game. And that's going to suck.
Yeah.
But if it's a key resource like wood or brick, you're screwed because you got to be able to build roads and stuff. So that's the same type of idea. When you set that board up, you're going to think, oh man, you know, this is going to be easy. This is going to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also toying around the idea with having a gear deck, which is basically gear that can modify your bike permanently. So I had two ideas for that. One was you would get paid just with, when you finish a delivery, boom, you could draw a gear card off the gear deck. And you could, that immediately would go into play.
Mm-hmm.
Or alternatively, maybe there's a gear store.
Oh yeah.
So you have to decide when to go there and maybe limit it so that you can only go there once between each delivery. So you have to make a delivery before you can go there.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That way you're not, somebody's not just like going there. So there's gotta be a point of return. So they have to go somewhere. So basically one tile would have the gear store on it.
Yeah.
And that could be anywhere in the city. So then you have to balance, do I want the gear to be better at making deliveries? So if there's four players and three deliveries are already taken,
mm-hmm.
and you can't possibly deliver, you know, there's like, I could try and steal, but I don't have any way to steal right now. I'm just going to go for some gear. So then you go to the gear store, you flip a gear card, and now, you know, you've got a specialty bonus on your bike or something.
Would you have to spend the money from your delivery to get that gear?
That's a thought. You could have tokens. Especially what would be interesting is if the tokens help you win the game, right?
Yeah.
But the gear is good enough to where you're willing to spend tokens on it.
Or if it's a gear store, maybe you just have an array of gear that's for sale.
Okay.
And depending on what delivery you've made, you could just trade your delivery card for a gear card. Maybe.
That's possible, yeah.
Yeah. And that gear card down the road could give you a multiplier to your ultimate score.
Right. The only other thing I was going to say was there could just be tokens for, you know, this delivery got me 7 tokens.
Yeah.
Seven.
Yeah, right. And if it's going to be a full board game in a box, then you could. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of in terms of trying to keep the materials simple, but you're right.
Right, right. Yeah. Just because the cool thing about that would be that you could then have each gear, piece of gear could have a set value.
Yeah, right.
So you flip over X amount. It's like 5, say, at the beginning of the game, and you can go there and you can buy, you know, that piece of gear. But I like the idea that you have to go to the store. So there's a sacrifice in doing that.
I agree, yeah, you're taking yourself out of the game.
And in one game, the gear store could be, like, right in the center of town, but in another game, it could be way on one end, you know, and that that could really suck. So.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that idea of, I mean, it's both a predefined game board, plus a randomized game board every time. Because it's all the same pieces, all the same buildings, all the same locations.
Right.
But you never know where they're going to be each time. I like that.
Cool. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of things that could be done with it.
Uh-huh.
The tough parts would be, I think the easy parts first would be determining the board. That would be super fun. You know what I mean? Determining a city layout that was cool with the buildings.
Right. Each tile would need some kind of like a name on it so you know what feature is there. Yeah.
Yep, that was my thought. Or maybe even within the tile, there would be, most tiles would say have two buildings in them, right?
Okay.
But some tiles would have just one, like one big building. Or one tile might not have any building. Maybe it's just a huge construction zone or something like that. You know, so I think there's a lot that could be done with that. Mm-hmm. Coming up with the ride cards, I think, would be pretty easy as well. Mm-hmm. Just determining, you know,
like standard moveset kind of thing.
Slugging another player or something.
Right.
So
that lets you steal the delivery item from somebody else.
Yeah, right. Because what would be cool about that is if, say, you just had to go next to someone to steal their car, like you just had to ride past them to steal their delivery, then everyone would know it was coming. But if you're riding near them, and they don't know if you have the card or not. Maybe you're actually trying to do something else. They don't know what you're trying to do, you know?
Right.
So it kind of keeps it a little bit of a surprise there for what you're actually trying to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the hard part, I think, would be the gear deck. Determining what bonuses would be okay.
Yeah.
For you know, what bonuses would be too much and what would be okay.
Yeah, okay, so that's getting in the realm where you'd have to do some playtesting and try some different things.
Right.
And see what feels good and what feels unbalanced.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, another way to balance that would be if you did a pricing system, like, you know, tokens for the best stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you had one that, say, allowed you to carry two packages, that would be super expensive. If you had one that allowed you to add a plus one to your rolls, that would probably be pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
so then also then, if you're going to be investing in gear, you're going to want to make sure the game lasts long enough for it to be worth it, you know?
Right.
So then knowing what the end game requirement is another issue. Do you play until you're out, until the delivery deck is empty? Do you play until X number of deliveries have been made, you know?
Or, that could be a set amount of deliveries. And then maybe in the end, too, there might be a bonus for having that extra gear. Maybe the gear has that token value, and maybe, say, if you buy it for 7 tokens, at the end of the game, it's worth 5, right?
Yeah.
So even though it distracted you from the game, it gave you a bonus, and at the end, it's still worth something.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like at the end of the game, it was cool having all this gear, but now it's not good for anything.
Yeah. So. Or maybe instead of worth more than, worth a little less. So you spent 5 on it.
That's what I meant.
Okay, yeah.
No, I was saying you spent 7 on it, and now at the end of the game, it counts for 5 points.
Okay, got it, yeah. Yeah, that makes more sense, yeah.
Because that gives an incentive to buy the gear a little more, because I wouldn't want, you got this cool gear deck, but nobody wants to buy it because it, you know, logistically doesn't make any sense.
Right, right.
Why would I buy the gear if I could just, you know, just win the game without it?
Right.
I
guess technically you could, if you're really good at what you're doing, get really good rolls.
Right.
But the gear deck should give you bonuses.
Right. Enough bonuses to make it worthwhile and not make it just kind of lame.
Right.
So.
I like it. I do. Yeah, I would play that.
Yeah, so I'm... Compared to my last idea, so I presented 2 ideas now.
Yeah.
So I presented the zombie strategy card idea, and then this bike messenger game idea. And obviously over the next, you know, few episodes, I'll present some more, switching back and forth with you. Markability wise, I'm thinking the zombie game probably has a little more marketability.
A little easier sell, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
But the bike messenger game, it's
different.
It'd be a tile game, which might excite people because tile games are approachable. They look fun.
Yeah, right.
When you look at a tile game, yeah, and that way, too, if you've got somebody that's not a fan of zombies, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to see that and be like, oh, gosh, you know, zombie game. Because I'm sure you get that, too, with something like zombies, because there are people that don't like zombies at all. So,
mm-hmm. I mean, I admit I'm a little burned out on zombies myself.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no. You know, that hearing you talk about that makes me think about Formula D.
Yeah.
Did we ever play that together?
I played it once. I don't like that game.
You don't like it? Okay. I like it a lot.
Right.
But I like the basic version of the game. I've never played the complicated version.
Right.
But I guess I'm thinking about that as similar only in terms of movement and moving a vehicle around an environment. Yeah. So that's probably not a really good comparison.
The thing I didn't like about Formula D was all the shifting and stuff.
Yeah? Yeah, because that's the whole game.
It was just too much for me. I don't know. We play tested it and you bought it, and I mean, it's not like I hated the game or anything. It just wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
So, I've known other people that think it's a great game too. So
I think it's totally VA personally.
Right.
Yeah, I like it. And I, you know, okay, we're a little off topic now, but, the thing that I like most about it is that you can play 10 players at once in that game. So I can bring that game to a party. And we can have 10 people playing the same game at the same time. I love that.
But are they all going to understand the game?
Well, if you're playing the basic game, yeah.
What if they're drinking?
It's a little tougher. You know, you want to pull it out middle of the night. It's true. In the middle of the evening, I should say.
Right.
Not at the end of the evening.
Right, right.
It's true. It's a good point. But, yeah, anyway. I like it. All right. I also like the idea that you would have to make little game pieces that are bikes.
I thought about that, too.
Yeah.
It might be kind of fun.
Right. With our little rapid 3D printer prototyping.
Right.
That we're excited about still.
Yes. 3 weeks, we're still excited about that.
Yeah.
the, uh, I was trying to think from a cost standpoint.
Yeah.
You've got your tiles for your artwork, right? Yep. One-sided tiles, that's nice.
Right. It's
one-sided tiles. You've got your... Then you've got three decks of cards.
Yeah.
But the delivery deck could be, you know, a 24 to 36 card deck.
You don't want that a huge number, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and why bother, right?
Right.
You
know what? And really, none of those decks would have to be really big.
No, it was, gear deck could be about the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, because if you figure if it's scaled for up to four players, which I'm a big fan of 2 to 4 players.
Me too, I like that.
If you had a four-player game going, I wouldn't see you needing more than 24 gear cards because what are the odds that everyone's going to have 6 gear cards?
You know what?
And when they're out, they're out.
Oh, well, too bad. Out of stock.
And the nice thing about the smaller deck is it kind of allows you to count cards a little better.
Yeah, that's true.
What hasn't been played yet?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Do I want to be near the gear store the next time somebody buys something because I want to see if the really sweet card comes up?
Yeah.
Also,
that gives you a good end game point. If you want to just limit to the number of deliveries, the game's over when everybody's made all the deliveries, and you only have 20 deliveries total.
Right.
You know, that puts a real limit on the length of the game.
That's very true. Yeah, that's an extremely good point.
Yeah.
Another thing with that would be, that I just thought of with the gear deck that might be fun is, to have certain deliveries require certain pieces of gear.
Oh.
So just a thought.
Hmm. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Because what if you didn't already buy that piece of gear? Would you be able to go to the gear store even though you have a package in your bag?
Well, but that's what I mean. The deliveries would get laid out as a community thing.
Oh, right. Yeah, so, first come, first serve.
Right. So.
Oh, yeah.
If I don't have... And it could say, to do this, you know, this difficult delivery, you need to have at least 2 pieces of gear on your bike.
Right.
It wouldn't even have to be a specific piece of gear. Just
A
couple pieces of gear or something.
Yeah.
Or this, or this, right? It's just a thought. It might make it interesting. That would be another way to encourage people to get gear.
Or maybe even optional rule piece for a more advanced game.
That's a good point, too. You know? Yeah.
Because I like it when that's an option sometimes.
That is nice. That is nice.
Yeah.
So...
Right on.
And then the ride deck, I think, would be pretty easy. That would probably be your biggest deck.
Mm-hmm.
But as cards were getting discarded, I mean, you could always have to reshuffle. I mean, it wouldn't be a huge deal.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's true. It's not a big deal to recycle that.
Right. You also could go the route of, like, a Sentinels where you have a set deck for you.
Yeah.
Like, everyone just has a set deck of... It's all the same, right?
Uh-huh.
But everyone just has a set ride deck of moves.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Oh, yeah, specific ride deck for each player.
Right.
And not, like, character-specific cards.
No, but just a specific ride deck for each player.
Yeah. You know, that might be good, too.
That would certainly be cost-effective, because you'd have less cards.
Right.
And then you could, that might also be cool, because you would know what cards do people have left in their hand.
Yeah,
that they've
played,
you know.
Yeah, right on.
So.
I like that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my pitch.
I like it. Got a name for it?
Not yet, no.
No, okay.
No. The only thing I keep bringing in my head is Quicksilver, that terrible Kevin Bacon movie. And there's a new bike movie coming out that looks pretty cool called Premium Rush with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And that's like the
JGL!
But that's like the best name ever for that game, Premium Rush.
Premium Rush.
Because he's like a bike messenger, and it looks pretty BA.
Okay.
That was the first thing, actually, when I saw that was the first thing that made me think of, like,
saw
the trailer and was like, it'd be kind of cool to have a bike messenger game. He's got, like, ninjas or something chasing him. In this game, we don't have that, but...
Yeah, I hate when ninjas are chasing bike messengers.
It sucks.
Yeah.
I may be wrong. It may not be ninjas. It may be something else. But...
I think Quicksilver's a better name. I haven't seen the movie, though.
I don't know if the movie's good or not, but I like the name, Quicksilver.
Yeah,
but
I
can't make a game named after
make
a movie.
It'd be a bad name for a game, maybe, because it would make you think of something else.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
All right.
Delivery Dude.
Delivery Dudes.
Delivery Dudes, that's it.
That isn't really, you know... I would want a game that kind of equates action.
Right? Uh-huh.
A name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
Hell on Wheels.
That's actually a TV show.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
On, AMC. It's on AMC. Yeah,
okay.
It's one of those AMC shows.
One of those reality shows?
AMC doesn't make reality shows.
Don't they? I don't have TV, dude. I don't know. I watch
AMC
Netflix.
AMC makes The Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, those type of shows.
Right.
Mad Men. Maybe you've heard of it? Yeah.
Yeah. I watch Netflix. That's all.
Sorry. Pretty sure some of those shows are on Netflix.
I think they all are. Yeah, that's true.
So.
Yeah, right on. Well, hey, I think we'll move on to our plugs for the evening.
Sounds good.
What you got?
Plugs. So I would like to plug somebody on Twitter. I believe they have a podcast coming out, too. And by the time this is published, maybe they'll publish their first episode. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But they're called The Geek Parent. That's at The Geek Parent. All one word. They're looking for people to interview right now over Twitter. So I've always been trying to retweet their stuff to help them get it out there. I know the person via Twitter who's doing the podcast. Super cool person. So I'm pretty excited for them. And, yeah, they've been great, too, because they've been asking some questions of some other podcasters that we follow via Twitter. And we've been stealing the answers for Andy. Best ways to do stuff. So I've always been making sure to thank both of them. Hey, thanks for asking that question for us. Yeah. And thanks for answering it.
Cool.
So, right on. What about yourself
there? Yeah, well, speaking of podcasts, I wanted to mention probably my favorite gaming podcast, and I guess I should say role-playing podcast. Role Playing Public Radio, the
RPPR.
RPPR with Ross Payton and Tom Church and a bunch of their crew. They actually have two different podcasts. They have the Role Playing Public Radio show where they talk about all kinds of different role playing game systems and different approaches to running your own games and a lot of interesting topics. They also have an actual play podcast where they record themselves playing various role playing systems. You know, they did a big, long D&D 4th Ed campaign. Right now, I think they're putting up a World of Darkness campaign called The Slender Man. And a bunch of random stuff. Through those guys, I first learned about Monsters and Other Childish Things. I first heard about Cthulhu Dark. I first heard about A Dirty World, which, oh man, I bonkers head over heels in love with Dirty World.
You played one game of that, right?
Played one game of that. And
you said it was really great.
Super fun, yeah. Super fun.
We'll have to do that sometime.
Yeah, Greg Stolze is the guy who created that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He created the One Roll Engine stuff. Nice. Which I guess Monsters is based off that, as is Dirty World. Super fun.
Monsters is another game that sounded interesting to me to play.
Yeah, yeah. So Role Playing Public Radio, those guys, they're fun guys to listen to. They've been doing this for a long time. You know, the it's good sound quality. They talk about interesting stuff, and I look forward to listening to their show every week.
And I can attest how much you like them because we ran into Ross Payton at Gen Con, wasn't it, last year?
We did, yeah.
And
I totally
geeked
out.
Would have thought that Rob was running into, like, Brad Pitt with how excited he was. It was slightly embarrassing. How did we run into him? I don't even remember.
Well, we were at the IPR booth. The Indie Press Revolution booth.
Okay.
And we were talking about HoboCon while we were there. And,
right.
And Ross came up looking for something else that IPR was selling. And I just happened, oh, hey. And telling him about HoboCon. and he said, I have a podcast. Have you ever heard of us? And I was like, oh my God, you're Ross Payton.
That's okay. So, I remember that. Yeah. I just remember how much of a 12-year-old girl you turned into. When you met him.
So,
it was pretty funny.
And then last year I played in a maybe it was 2 years ago. Anyway, he runs games there every year, so I got tickets to play in a game and it was fun, it was a good time. So that's enough geeking out for me though.
All right. Well, I don't have anything else.
No, I think we're all set. Thanks for hanging out with me today.
Yeah.
I guess we'd like to thank everyone for listening to Building the Game. Please come back and join us every week as we share our new ideas and what we've learned as we go on this crazy journey of becoming game designers. Good night.
Have a good one.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Oh, butt cancer.
You've been listening to Building the Game, a proud sponsor of the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social.
Are you going to Gen Con and want to hang out with your favorite podcasts and friends? Come to the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social for dinner and a party on Thursday, August 16th.
Find out more details and get your tickets before they're sold out at GenConSocial.com.